Welcome to the Mind Money Spectrum podcast, where your hosts, Aaron Ogti and Trishul Patel, go beyond traditional finance questions to help you explore how to use your money to achieve the freedom you want in life.
In this episode, Trishul and Aaron are joined by Brittany Malaga, a financial advisor from North Carolina, to discuss credit scores. She explains how your credit score is calculated from all the information in your credit report. By understanding these components, you can identify which actions will help build your credit score when you're just getting off the ground. She then relates what you can do to improve a less than ideal credit score. With this knowledge and self-awareness, you can judge when to use credit opportunistically and when to be appropriately cautious. And now, on to our conversation.
Hi, my name is Aaron Ogti. I'm a financial advisor in the Bay Area, and I'm here with Trishul Patel, a wealth manager on the East Coast. And today, we have a guest, Brittany Malaga, a financial advisor from North Carolina.
Hey, great to be here today, and thanks everybody for listening, and really awesome to have you here, Brittany.
Yeah, thank you guys. I am so excited to join you today.
I'm excited to have you here. So, over the last few weeks, Trish and I have been talking about some of the kind of introductory finance topics. We talked about how to open a Roth IRA, how to actually make that first investment into a target date ETF. Last week, we talked about just the simplest piece of advice for someone in their 20s was just to save more. And one of the things we talked about and kind of wanted to get to was discussing credit scores. And just kind of it's important at the beginning to try and build this up, but we knew that Brittany had more experience and expertise with credit scores. She's actually written about this for her company's website. So when Trish and I kind of realized this is the topic we wanted to go through, we asked Brittany to join us today. So again, thank you for being here, Brittany. So please take a few minutes to kind of describe yourself, introduce yourself, describe your firm and the kind of clients that you help with.
Absolutely. So I am a financial advisor. I live in Raleigh, but my firm is actually in Chapel Hill, North Carolina. That's where I went to school. I went to UNC. And while I was a student, I studied math and I just kind of fell into financial planning. I found an internship and honestly had no idea what financial planning was, but I realized pretty quickly on that it was a perfect combination of those logical problem-solving skills I was learning in my math degree. But I've always been a people person. And so I knew I wanted a career that let me work directly with people. And financial planning is exactly that. So started working as an intern at the firm that I am still at. So I have done everything possible there, countless applications. I know all the back office things. But a few years ago, I got my CFP and I am now an advisor, one of six advisors with the firm, actually. We're growing. But we're still a pretty small office. We have a wide variety of clients, a lot of pre-retirees and retirees. Being in the Research Triangle Park, we definitely work with a lot of people in the tech industry. But my specialty in particular is working with more of our young professional, young families, those kind of clients. So this basics of personal finance, that's my whole domain. And I have a whole section on our blog with all kinds of topics like this. But credit scores are definitely something relevant to people looking to make some of their first big purchases, whether that's a car or a house. It's good to know what that information means.
Is your blog titled, is that the Personal Finance 101? You write all those?
Yes, Personal Finance 101. That is all me.
Great, great. And for those listeners who may feel like you recognize Brittany's voice, that's because Brittany was kind enough to create our intro and record that. So you actually have heard Brittany with every single episode of this podcast, but now you actually get her live and answering questions. So thank you very much for that, Brittany. It's been very, very helpful for our podcast.
Yeah, love that.
So you said you work with young professionals and credit scores are kind of important for like buying the car, buying that first home. Do you mind starting very, very basic, just describing credit scores, and then we'll progress to like how those actually impact your life?
Definitely. I think basics first is always important. And actually, let's start with a credit report. That's really where your credit score comes from. So your credit report is a document generated by one of three of the credit bureaus in the U.S. So TransUnion, Equifax, and what's the third one? Experian. That's right. So they take a look at pretty much your whole history. They know who you are, any sort of loans you've ever taken out. It's this living document that's constantly being updated, but every single credit card, every single auto loan, anything you've done, they have a full history of that. So your credit score is a number, and there's not one number. You actually have tons of credit scores. There's a whole bunch of different formulas, but your credit score is calculated based off of the data in your credit report. So depending on what company is calculating that credit score, it could be slightly different. I think generally they range from the 300 to 400s at the lowest to the 800s at the highest, but it is pulled from that data in your credit report.
So the data going into the credit report that the three companies use, that's coming from, you said, past borrowing? Describe where does that data come from?
Yeah, it comes from, right, anything that you've done to borrow money in the past. It also includes, I know, your previous addresses, I think maybe your previous employers, but there'll be a line on the credit report with every single credit card you've owned, every single loan that's ever been made to you. And the credit report actually shows for most items, the past 7 years of history. So every single payment you've made, whether or not it's on time, we'll talk more about why that's really important, but it's really a long-term history of you and how you've done as a borrower previously.
Okay. So do you mind then kind of going into a breakdown of like where do those numbers come into play? How important are different things? And start to give us a little more detail.
Yeah, let's get into it. So I guess the reason the credit score is so important, I mean, it's just a number that's created from this data about you. The reason it's important is because that's how lenders assess how risky you might be as a borrower. So if you've got a high credit score, they know that you have a good track record of paying off debt previously. And so they're going to be more likely to either lend you more money or maybe at a lower interest rate, or maybe you want to qualify for that awesome credit card that has the really great perks. They won't let just everyone have that. But if you've proven yourself to be a responsible borrower before, you're more likely to have those kinds of opportunities. So kind of in a nutshell, that's why credit scores are so important. If you know you're going to be purchasing something soon, then you probably want the lowest rate you could for that. So it's good to know what your credit score might be. So what your credit score actually is, like I said, there's dozens of different formulas out there, but the number one most common formula is for the FICO score. You've probably all heard of that. So we'll break down the different components of it because it really is just a math formula pulled from your data. So biggest part of it, 35% of that score is driven by your payment history, meaning from the liabilities that you've had previously, whether that's credit cards, student loans, auto loans, from your previous liabilities, are your payments on time? Have you made all your payments? It's really as simple as that. They look if you're delinquent on any loans or if you're regularly late. So that makes up 35% of it. That is over a third. So you can see why we're starting to allude to making payments on time as being something really important to do. And we certainly have some tricks that I can share as to how to make sure you don't let anything fall behind, but we'll get to that. So payment history, 35%. Next biggest category that makes up your FICO score is credit usage. That is another 30%. So this is another really big one. What that really is a ratio of what your credit card balance generally is divided by the total amount of credit you have available to you. So are you keeping high balances on your credit cards? Are you reaching that credit limit? Or are you keeping that a pretty low percentage? I think there's some rule of thumbs, like if you're under 10% of using your credit that's available to you, that's really good. We definitely don't want balances to get too close to the 100% mark there, because that's probably when you start getting in the territory of not being able to make all your payments. So that's another 30% there. That's another really big one. Those first two combined, we're at 65% already of how they calculate your credit score. So the next two make up a much smaller percentage of your FICO score. So 15% of your score is the age of your credit accounts. And I think it depends on exactly which credit score you're looking at, whether they're talking how old is the oldest credit account you have versus the average age of your credit accounts. So some of you may have opened a credit card when you were late in high school, and so you've had credit cards for years, and that might be a good reason to keep your oldest account open, whether or not it's the one you use the most. In the same realm, if having a longer or higher age for your credit cards is important, then you probably don't want tons of recent accounts, because that's going to pull down that age of your credit accounts.
So it's like a average age calculation, I guess. Maybe they say you have one account that's 10 years, that's great. But then if you open 9 more that are each like a few months each, well, now instead of having a 10-year history, you're down to just a few months because you just opened up so many new accounts.
Exactly.
Ouch.
And I know. Yeah, it's good to be thinking about how old some of your cards are, and if just opening new ones, is that going to pull that average way down? Maybe, maybe not, but definitely something to be thinking about.
So that sounds like an interesting tip there. Like if you're looking to pull in a new card, what you may want to also think about is not closing the card that you're currently using because you found a better one, but just kind of keeping it open.
Exactly. Yeah. Assuming you're pretty responsible with credit cards, and having more cards doesn't equal more balances that you aren't paying off, then yeah, keeping an old account open is definitely a great way to boost up that credit history length.
So this actually brings a couple of questions to mind. Yep. So one, like I know some people will kind of play a points game of they'll go get the new card that's mm-hmm. offering a sign up bonus of rewards points. Yeah. Are you saying that the opening those credits probably hurt their credit score?
Well, it could. So that credit history length, that is 15% of the FICO score. So yeah, having a bunch of new cards is going to bring that category down. But it could be beneficial to have a number of cards at your disposal. And it definitely depends on what your end goal is. Maybe you want the highest credit score possible, in which case opening those new cards just for the points, probably not worth it. But if you aren't looking to make a huge purchase in the near future and you don't really need your credit score to be at its highest point ever, then maybe the benefits of having those credit card rewards outweighs the hit you might see in your credit score.
I also see how that might help with the credit utilization percent, which Brittany, you just mentioned, that's 30% of your weighting. So double the credit history length. Mm-hmm. And if you open new accounts, well, previously, if you had that one account that's 10 years old with a 10,000 limit, but now you open, and that's, you know, like maybe almost maxed out, but now you have a bunch of new cards, which each have, let's say magically $10,000 each on those 9 new cards. Well, now your credit utilization percentage is far lower.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. With the credit utilization ratio there, you can either decrease the balance or increase the total credit available to you. Both of those would improve that ratio. And whether it's getting more credit cards or requesting a credit increase on existing cards, both of those could help with that factor. Yeah, so something that hurts one category doesn't necessarily mean it's going to hurt your score overall. Good point.
And so, go ahead, Trishel.
I was just going to say, just on this particular point, I have a little tip here that I've used in the past as well, where I found a new car that had a nice promotion. Maybe I had a big purchase coming up. So I'd like to kind of time that by getting a car that has, you know, maybe a couple $100s of sign up bonus if I'm paying for like a new furnace or a down payment on a car, something like that. But sometimes those cards, they don't have too much value after you get that bonus, and they may have an annual fee associated with them. So you may not want to do that, because again, if you open that account and then you immediately close it, you're going to have a short history and it's not going to play too well into your score. But one option is you might have the ability to transfer that card to a similar card with the same bank that doesn't charge a fee and still retain that credit history, therefore not taking a hit that you would have if you just, you know, open that account, use the sign up bonus and then closed it immediately. So that's something you can kind of think about if this occasion does come up every now and then.
So if I have in the past opened a credit card, but I no longer use it, it sounds like it's worth holding on to, because that helps increase the average age or even like the total age. But does that unused credit score also help that credit usage, that credit utilization, right? Or do unused credit cards with zero balance kind of not count?
Yeah, I think that's a win-win in that situation. That would definitely still count towards your credit utilization, because technically it is credit that's available to you for you to want to use it. So certainly a great reason to keep old accounts active, even if you aren't actively using it. Although you will want to make sure some credit card companies, if you literally never use the card, they may try to close the account on you. So in that situation, you might want to every now and then put something on that card you don't use too much.
Okay. So the key is open up a few different cards a long time ago and then have a very low balance now.
Exactly. Yes. So advice you should have done 10 years ago.
Well, it's interesting. No. We had that conversation on what to do in your 20s. And for the information that you just provided us, those details on the credit score, I can see a little bit of a chicken and egg scenario if you're just kind of getting started, meaning in order to get your credit, well, you need to, according to this score, you need to have a good payment history. But how do you get that if you don't have it? Same thing with the utilization. How do you get a utilization if you don't have the cards to utilize to begin with? And that kind of flows through with the others. So what do you do in those situations?
Yeah, I have two thoughts here. First is to just get started, because even if you may not be able to get the best credit card that you want immediately, just getting a credit card and starting to build that history is key. Now, I also know that some of the credit bureaus allow you to pay to allow other financial factors to account in your credit score. So paying utility bills on time, things like that, just showing other bills being paid regularly rather than credit specifically. There are ways to allow that to help build up your credit score.
Okay. So we have 35% was your credit history. You have shown that you can borrow and then you will pay back on time. Mm-hmm. 30% was the credit usage or utilization. It's kind of how much of your available credit are you currently using? Mm-hmm. That ratio. 15% was the age of the credit, kind of either, depending on the calculation, your oldest credit history or a weighted average of all your different credit lines. So what else goes into the credit score?
Yeah, this leaves us with two more categories. So 10% is credit mix. And that's really, do you have just credit cards in your credit report, or do you have a broader mix of history? So that would be ideal if you had maybe some student loans that they could see that you had paid off, an auto loan, a mortgage. Certainly not saying you need to go get any of these items to improve your credit score. Again, this is only accounting for 10% of your score, but it's definitely reason to consider to consider using some financing for some things besides just credit cards.
Okay. So if you can get a deal at a car auto loan at a 0% interest rate, mm-hmm. it might be worth it to do it. You could, even if you have the cash to buy the car outright, or you've already saved up enough, if you can get mm-hmm. a low enough interest rate, especially if it's zero, because just rates really low right now, that would actually help build your credit score by having a different type of credit.
Exactly. And yeah, with interest rates being so low, that's certainly not going to be the reason not to do it. And just because you get a 4-year car loan doesn't mean you actually need to have it for 4 years. You could always have it for a little while and then pay it all off if you could. I think that would help your payment history and help that credit mix. Definitely.
Okay. And so you said there's one more component?
Yeah. Going to say that brings us to 90% of the FICO score. The last 10% is looking at the number of recent credit inquiries you have. So before we get into that, there's a difference between a soft inquiry and a hard inquiry. And you've probably heard that you don't want any, too many hard credit checks because that can hurt your credit score. But a soft inquiry, those don't hurt your credit score or impact in any way. And that is if you are checking your credit report, if your employer asks for permission to check your credit. Sometimes companies will check your credit report to see if they can pre-authorize you for a credit card. I looked at my credit report last night just to see if there was anything that I could bring today. And I saw that American Eagle checked me out. So I might be getting some mail from them for a potential credit card that I won't take them up on. But those kinds of things, that won't hurt your credit score.
So what I've also noticed, because I've been also shopping around on my end for refinancing some property, now's a great time because rates are low, in fact. And if you are shopping around for credit, they will hit hard inquiries if you go far enough into the process with a bunch of lenders. But the credit companies do realize that people will be shopping around, maybe looking at a few at a time and kind of bouncing off prices. So what they will do is if they're near each other within a 30-day window, they will count all those hard hits as one hit, with the understanding that, yes, people will be doing a little bit of shopping around to see which rates are competitive against each other.
Yeah, I think it's good that they give that kind of flexibility. But then outside of, if you're doing it in a really short time frame, if they see you having lots of hard credit checks, that kind of raises the red flag because maybe you really need cash and so you're applying for lots of loans, and that definitely wouldn't make you look like a good potential borrower. So yeah, good for shopping around that if you do it within that time period, it won't hurt you the same way.
Makes okay. sense.
So have you noticed, are there any, I want to say misconceptions? Like once you understand the components, like one of the things I'm educated guessing that debit cards don't affect credit score at all. So for those who might, especially younger conservative, might have been afraid of using credit cards because they've heard so many problems and you don't want to get too in debt and rack up balances. So they use debit cards as a way to kind of control cash flow and make sure that they don't spend too much. But it sounds like that doesn't impact their credit score, doesn't help build that credit at the beginning. Is there any, like, one, can you confirm that? And two, is there anything else like that you can think of those misconceptions?
Yeah. Debit cards definitely won't help your credit score. And I do think credit card debt is something to be very wary of, especially if you're new to the whole personal finance world. In my research, though, I did learn there are credit cards that you can open and have backed by something like a cash account debit card. So although it is technically a credit card, it is only going to give you the limit for the amount of cash that you already have available in the account. Can't remember exactly what they are called, but something like that could be a great starter credit card if you're worried about the risks of, credit cards.
You might also say that if you have a card, you and they keep raising your limit, you might tell them, you know, I want to keep that a bit lower. Exactly. Trust myself with a $50,000 limit, even though you're happily giving it to me.
Yeah, I definitely got some tips for credit. Yeah, for thinking about how to build up your credit, but it definitely depends on where you fall on that line of are credit cards dangerous for you? And you have to be honest with yourself about that. Or are they not? And if you know that you might be tempted by having the option to put more on your card, then yeah, you certainly fall into that category.
I honestly had never thought about turning down a credit increase because I did know about the credit utilization. So like you want that higher available credit so that the amount that you use is that lower ratio. But yeah, if you don't have that kind of self-control and that self-awareness, then yeah, I can see turning down that limit increase.
That reminds me of something I also read where you could potentially have yourself be added as an authorized user on a friend or family member's card, and they don't really have to give you the account information or a copy of a card, but if they're willing to take on having you as an authorized user on the account, then that could help build your credit too if you are just starting out.
That is one thing I did for my daughter a year after she was born.
A year after? So that's amazing.
So we let her shop around with it in the living room, and she can expense things if she runs out of money.
That's adorable.
So Brittany, I don't know if you know, heard the story when we talked about 529 plans. I was doing the math, and it's like, it's always an 18-year age of like how much you need to save from birth to college. Except that Trishul has started contributing to a 529 plan 2 years before his daughter was born.
Wow.
I think he put himself as the beneficiary and changed it. So
I was just going to ask, how do you put potential baby?
So the fact that he set up his just a few years old now, daughter as an authorized user on a credit card actually doesn't surprise me that much.
No, that makes sense. She's going to be in great financial shape by the time she's ready to really spend some money.
Okay.
So maybe that kind of brings me to someone like your daughter. So once she is, you know, in high school or college, maybe what are some best habits that she could be learning about or thinking about as money becomes more real? And I think something you're clearly already teaching her is how to be responsible with credit cards. I personally never put more on a credit card than I could immediately pay off. I know some people are willing to put a little bit more knowing they'll get a paycheck at the end of the month, but really if you can use credit cards and never maintain a balance, never have to pay interest, I think that is the best thing that anyone could do.
That makes sense to me.
One of the stories I'd want to tell and kind of fits in the very early stage. I would have been a freshman in college. I went to a UCLA football game and they were offering free towels that you sign up for a credit card. You get a free towel. And so I signed up for a credit card at the stadium. Again, I was 18, freshman in college, but it had a $500 credit limit. I had enough in scholarships to kind of pay all my books and tuition. And for my dorm, I think my dorm cost $900 a month. And so I would actually use my $500 a month credit card to pay $500 of my monthly dorm payment. And then the other $400 I had to write a check for. And I do that every month for the first year, I think, until they increase my credit limit so I could pay my dorm with my credit card.
A towel too. What a perk.
I did it. I literally just did it for the towel. Like there's no planning, no foresight, but it was definitely like what you talked about. I had the cash in the checking account to make the payment, but I knew I had to make my dorm payment anyways, and I had enough from scholarship to make that payment. So I only used the credit card for the thing I already had the cash for.
That's smart. I think that's a really good way to do that.
It's interesting because I've also heard times when somebody's starting a small business and trying to get a credit line for a small business that doesn't really have a history can be tricky. And I know some people who have used their credit cards as a 30 to 60 day revolver, meaning you get pretty much a free line of credit if you have, let's say, a $50,000 credit limit, meaning it's a free loan for about 30 to 60 days. And that might be just enough to get a few things going with the business, where if you have reoccurring income and you have some revenue coming in, you could use that expense, you could use that revenue to pay off expenses with a 30 to 60 day lag and hopefully grow your business that way a little more quickly.
That's smart. That makes a lot of sense.
Okay. So what's next on kind of tips to build your credit, especially for
Well, still on the topic of making sure you're making your payments and having reasonable credit card balances, I think there's a few ways you can make sure that you won't miss any payments. You can certainly set up auto pay for a lot of financial institutions where the money at the end of the month automatically comes from your checking account or wherever to pay the credit card balance. And that means you don't have to remember to do it. And as long as you have enough cash in your checking account, then you should be good, no problem. And if that's not an option at your bank, then I would definitely set up some kind of alert on your phone or some reminder, just so it's not totally on you to remember to pay that credit card bill.
So is there any kind of cost, or I don't say cost in terms of financial, but any penalty of if I have it set up so that I'm automatically going to make all the minimum payments, is there any concern with the credit score of kind of only making the minimum payment for a month or two if I just happen to forget? So I set up the auto pay, but it only pays the minimum.
Yeah, that's a good question. I'm pretty sure that if, as long as you are paying that minimum payment, you're not going to get penalized, but you're definitely going to be paying interest on the balance that's left.
So there is a financial cost. That's a good point. There's a direct monetary cost for not paying it off.
Yes. Better to just not have a balance if you can help it.
I don't know how I blanked on that. Is there a financial? Yeah, the interest, the really, really high interest rate that all credit cards charge.
Well, but I'm sure, Aaron, you had the 0% interest card for 18 months, so I'm sure you're okay with that.
I have done that a few times, yes.
Yeah. Let's see. One tip that I don't even think we mentioned and kind of goes back to the basics even more is to regularly check your credit report. Mm-hmm. So I mentioned there's three different institutions that generate credit reports, and then your credit score comes from those credit reports. So if you have no idea what's on those credit reports, then you are probably going to be either pleasantly or not so pleasantly surprised whenever you apply for a loan. So if you go, I think there's a government website, annualcreditreport.com. If you go to that site, you can request your credit report from each of those agencies. You can get one report a year from each of them each year for free. So if you know you're about to buy something big, you know, buying your first car, whatever car, you might want to go ahead and pull your credit report from all three agencies just so you can look it over, know what's on there, and also see if there are any errors. Errors definitely get made on credit reports, and that ultimately won't end up hurting your credit score, but you're certainly going to have a period of time where if something's wrong, that's going to be reflected. And until you get it corrected, then your score won't be looking as good.
So if it's wrong, who do you reach out to? Do you reach out to the people who sent the bad information in, or do you talk to the credit reporting agencies?
Ooh, that's a good question. I don't actually know. Do either of you know?
I think you do both. I think so. You definitely want to contact the credit reporting agencies, and they may either recheck, yes, we see where the error is, or no, the other financial institution, we're reflecting what that institution reported. Mm-hmm. And if that's the case, then you need to go to that relevant institution and say, you reported something incorrectly. So it kind of depends on where the error is. is my understanding.
Yeah, that makes sense. I think also regularly checking your credit report would also let you get ahead of any potential fraud issues. That's certainly something to be aware of. And if someone has taken out a card in your name, I would want to be aware of that as soon as possible.
Oh, that's a good one, because if you show up, you know, to get like buy a car or something, you get really excited and you found the model you want and you're at the dealership and you're ready to work through financing. That's probably the worst time to find out somebody has a trade line in your name for, you know, a $10,000 bill that you have no idea what's going on with it.
Ooh. Wait, did you say trade line?
Just thinking about that.
What's a trade line?
It's a credit line.
Do you want to expand on that?
Not terribly, but I used to build software for banks that digested credit report information, and they call it trade lines.
Okay.
Yeah, definitely avoid that. And one other thing to mention on this topic. So maybe pull all three credit reports at one time if you know you've got a big purchase coming up. But if you don't have something big coming up, I would consider spreading out those three reports over the course of the year. So pull one in the first quarter of the year and then so on. So that way, I mean, you won't know immediately if one of the institutions has something wrong, but just you're regularly reviewing things to look for any red flags.
Okay. Is it because you only get one pull free per year? Is that why?
Yes, exactly. Yeah.
Okay, that makes sense.
Yeah. And when you pull your credit report, I think you can often also pay for your credit score at that time too. So yeah, that's one free credit report. And these agencies don't automatically calculate any scores, I guess, because there's so many different formulas that could be used. It really depends on who's calculating the score and for what purpose. But a lot of times you can pay to get a credit score when you pull your credit report.
Oh, so pulling the credit report does not necessarily mean you get a credit score.
Correct. Yes. So one easy way to find out your credit score, at least this is what I do. I have a credit card with Capital One, and so they have a little widget on their app where you can check your credit score. And I think they say it's just an estimate, but I looked on my credit report and I can tell that they're doing those soft inquiries every time I click the app, which apparently I do once a month. but that's an easy way to get a sense of what your credit score might be when a hard inquiry is done.
That's a good point, Brittany. So certainly check out the credit cards that you already have, and they might give you a window into those numbers rather than having to pay. I think something that others may have also used in the past are those websites like Mint and Credit Karma, where they might also provide some visibility into that.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, I know. My Wells Fargo login also has the same little widget of check your credit score.
Yeah, they've gotten so smart too. I know Capital One's lets you play with hypotheticals, like what if I increase my limit to this, or what if, and see what that might do to the resulting number.
Oh, that's a good one, because if you're in a situation where your score isn't looking too hot and you need to repair it, it might be good to have a plan of action where you're actually working on the things that are most likely to A, be actionable by you, and B, actually provide the impact you're looking for.
Yeah, and maybe that's a good segue. We should probably talk about what to do if you're not just starting out, but your credit score is not looking good. Maybe what are some steps you could take and what should you prioritize?
Yeah, I know a few bizarre errands who actually have taken their credit cards from college and ended up graduating with tens of thousands of dollars in debt. So that they would be very happy to know what you have to say about this, Brittany.
Real Aaron did graduate with some credit card debt, not that much. I was able to pay it off basically as soon as I got my first job, my first real post-college job. It was that I had built up my credit score, so they increased my balance, and then I turned 21 and was able to use that on nights and weekends. So,
damn.
Yes, I paid what I could every month, but the senior year of college I did graduate with just a little bit of credit card debt that I had to pay off when I got a real job.
I'm surprised I wasn't in the same boat. I never had more than like $200 in my bank account, but I never had much of a credit card balance. So I guess sometimes you just got to learn the lesson the hard way. But so say you are looking at your credit report or your credit score and you're like, oh my God, this is not good. I think first it would be smart to understand what's really pulling your credit score down. Is it because you've missed a lot of payments or you've been late on a lot of payments? And you'd be able to see the account would show delinquent payments. And like I said, it shows usually 7 years of history. So this might be something that you did 6 years ago that's still impacting you now, or maybe it's something that's happening currently. So pinpointing, is it a payment problem? Are you delinquent on accounts? Or is it something a little less out of your control, like maybe you just haven't had credit cards for very long, so the age of your credit is not very high.
So it also sounds like, based upon what you just said, if you have two payments that are late, one is 6 years and 11 months, and one is 1 year and 1 month, you probably want to pay off the 1 year and 1 month first with the hopes of waiting a month or two. Like, does that disappear after 7 years?
Yeah, I am not totally sure. If the loan is, delinquent, I don't think it would be undelinquent after 7 years. It would still exist.
Yeah, I think if it was delinquent at 6 years, 11 months, and you didn't pay it off then it's still delinquent every following month after.
Yeah, yeah. So ideally, the best thing you would do if you were seeing some missed or late payments is to put some kind of plan in place where you aren't missing or you aren't late to those payments. And if it's just because you forget, then I think some of our tips about setting up auto pay makes a lot of sense. But if cash flow is a problem and that's the reason why you have these credit card balances, then a larger strategy might need to come into place.
That makes sense, Brittany. Like, from my perspective as a landlord, I do look at credit reports for potential tenants, and missed payments is a pretty big red flag to me. The last thing I want to do is not be able to use that rental payment to make a mortgage payment, because at the end of the day, it's not really my job to figure out how to pay a mortgage if somebody is renting the property. That can cause a mess very quickly. So I can say, yeah, I certainly put a big weight myself when I look at a credit report for a prospective tenant to see if they've actually missed a payment in the recent past.
And one thing you could think about doing if you have missed payments, or if there's something in your life going on that's just making it really hard to make payments on time, maybe a global pandemic, for example, you can try contacting the creditors and seeing if they'll offer any flexibility. I mean, sometimes they're just institutions with rules and that is that, but depending on the situation, they might be able to offer some flexibility with repayment.
That's a good one. I have heard instances where somebody might say, you know, I know I have this amount of debt, but what if I cut you a check right now? Are you willing to help me out on the credit side and you get your money now rather than us going back and forth for the next year? So that might actually be a win-win.
Yeah.
One quick like CFP interjection. If you do have debt forgiven, that is considered taxable income. So just kind of keep that in mind that if you owe $10,000 and you reach some agreement of I'll pay you $6,000 if you forgive the entire $10,000, and if they agree to that, kind of same thing happened, especially through 2008, 2009, and a little after as people were trying to figure out how not to foreclose on their house. And I can't pay back the mortgage because interest rates have jumped, everything that happened back then. Some lenders were willing to take less money to not have to foreclose because they don't have to sell a house in a market that's down dramatically. But the debt forgiven was all taxable income. So sometimes especially when it comes to mortgages, you might be forgiving $100,000 or more. So that adds to your taxable income for the year.
Yeah, adds to your taxable income, adds to your tax bill,
yeah.
which means you're going to need to find a way to pay for that potentially.
Yeah. It's, I would almost rather owe credit card companies money than owe the IRS money.
Oh, neither.
Because one of them will just result in a worse credit score. The other one can result in you going to jail.
That is true. Yeah, the federal government has much more they can do if you owe them money. So one idea, maybe to avoid owing credit card companies money, is to consider consolidating credit cards, either into one credit card that maybe has a lower interest rate, or maybe to your bank or credit union. That can be an option as well.
So you can open up a separate line and say, I'm going to take my four credit cards, which each have like 10, 15, 20% interest, mm-hmm. and boil it down into one account that has all the balances of the three with a lower interest rate than all the other three.
Exactly. It's win-win, really. Lower interest rate, and you're only having to worry about one payment a month rather than however many before. That could simplify things and make it a little bit easier to tackle that debt.
That makes sense.
What else do you usually advise clients when they have credit questions?
Yeah, I think if someone is coming to me not in a good credit situation and the reason has to do with spending on credit cards or not being able to handle cash flow, that can definitely get into a larger financial planning conversation of what is your income actually and what are you spending your money on and is that important? Is all of that necessary? Breaking it down, looking at your expenses, really. There's certainly, you guys probably have some good tricks too for how to handle people who are more tempted by their credit cards. I know someone who put their credit card in the freezer so they wouldn't spend money on it. Keep your account open, I guess, for the age of credit. But yeah, there's a variety of suggestions there.
The closest one, one I have seen work out was turning off the Amazon like one click and not letting Amazon store your credit card. Mm-hmm. Where just like the manual entry, if you have to type in your credit card each time, and it basically a lot of retailers are aware of this, and a lot of even sales and marketing, if you want to make a sale, you reduce the friction. So to make it easier for the customer or client to buy, but if you're the customer trying not to spend money, you increase the friction. You make it just slightly harder, and maybe it's something along the lines of, you know what, I don't need this right now. I can wait. I can push it off. And just what we can do to increase that friction is one of those ways to not use your credit card quite as much.
I like that one. That kind of ties into Brittany's suggestion of putting in the freezer, meaning you don't store it on your computer, but you actually have to go out across the living room, open the refrigerator door. I have also heard that if you're interested and tempted to buy something, leave it in your shopping cart overnight and see how you feel the next day. Was it really an impulse buy, or is it something that you really want?
I think that's really smart. Yeah.
There's enough times I'm in my home office and like, I left my wallet on my nightstand upstairs in my bedroom. I have to walk all the way up there to get my credit card to pay for something.
Well, I would not recommend this for anyone, but I have my credit card number memorized. So
so does my wife.
Yeah. Wait, so does my wife.
Must be a thing. Yeah, that's funny. Yeah, so there's definitely a number of like cash flow, understanding your expenses and knowing if it's something important or just something you want. That's huge. But there are also professionals that specifically do things like this, credit counselors. And at some point that might be someone to contact if you're really in a sticky situation and you don't know how to see the light at the end of the tunnel.
Good stuff.
Well, do you have any other personal stories of your relationship with, and not necessarily credit cards specifically, but just credit or credit history that you'd like to share?
Yeah, I haven't worked with too many clients that have had really extreme situations. So I definitely felt fortunate for them for that. Personally, I've just tried to implement all the best tips that I shared today. So not putting more on your credit card than you can immediately pay off, and keeping your older credit cards to build that age of credit. On my to-do list, though, is to get a new credit card that has some really good perks. So there's definitely lots of bonuses to having that higher credit score, definitely more opportunities.
Okay. Churchill, any stories you want to share?
I think with the points, if you do have the opportunity to pay for something with a credit card and there's no fees attached to it, it's kind of a no-brainer there, because you get like 2% back for something you were going to buy anyway. Mm-hmm. So that's just something to think about. I remember, like, when I went to go buy a car, I wanted to pay cash, and I asked, can I pay some of this with a credit card? And they said, yeah, you can put up to $5,000. I'm like, okay,
$5,000. Yeah. I love that.
Yeah. I like just that concept of you're not using the credit card to buy things that you don't have the money for. It's when you were going to pay cash already, using a credit card, maybe an opportunistic way to either get some kind of reward or help build your credit score, because you know you're going to make that payment and pay it off right away.
Right. Good stuff.
I wonder if that $5,000 is like is it a company rule? Is it a federal policy? Is it a state rule? I'm curious. Like, if you have a high enough credit line, why couldn't? I've never thought about buying a car on a credit card.
It could be because companies have to pay a fee to run credit cards. I know when I lived in an apartment, I always wanted to put my rent on my credit card, but then they charged a 3.5% fee to do that, which was more than the 3% cash back I could get. So wasn't worth it.
Yeah, I think it's a trade-off that the credit card company is going to charge the dealership a fee. So they want to trade off the incentive of, okay, what can we do to close the sale versus how much fees are we willing to take a hit on for the credit card? And they probably said, okay, we don't want it to be too high, but we want it enough so that we get more deals done.
Yeah. That makes sense. Now that I think about it, I think I can pay my property taxes with a credit card, but I would have to pay the 2.19% credit card transaction fee. Mm-hmm. And that is greater than the rewards I would get. So
I will say I'm in the midst of planning my wedding, and we the venue and got to pay for half of that on my credit card with no extra fees for us. So definitely look for opportunities.
Yeah.
So when the merchant's willing to absorb the credit card fee, that's when you put it on the credit card.
Yeah, exactly.
Those are good ones. I think that the other ones that come to mind are airline tickets are big purchases that happen infrequently, but those would be good items. And I remember there were a few education expenses, like, you know, for like the CFP courses, stuff like that are good examples of, if they don't charge a fee and you know you're going to need to do it anyway, might as well get some points.
Makes sense.
That's a good point. Yep. Well, this is a fun conversation. Thank you. Thank you very much for joining us today, Brittany.
Yeah. Thank you guys so much for having me. This was great.
Yeah, I enjoyed it very much, Brittany. And thanks, everybody, for listening. If you're enjoying these episodes, do spread the word. Okay, thanks. Bye.
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 We appreciate you joining us today for this episode of the Mind Money Spectrum podcast. Be sure to visit mindmoneyspectrum.com to access the entire library of episodes. Remember, it's not black and white, but the wide spectrum of gray area where you get to pursue the freedoms you want in life. Opinions voiced in this material are for general information only and are not intended to provide specific advice or recommendations for any individual. All performance referenced is historical and is no guarantee of future results. All indices are unmanaged and may not be invested in directly. Have a nice day.